CJLO, and you have three guests from KRFE.
I'm Paul.
And I'm Jesse.
And I'm Jacob.
And fifth grade at St. Jude's School.
True that. True that.
I'm Lucas Matthew Marsh, and this is the CJLO Community Calendar for the week of Monday, November 20th to Sunday, November 26th. We're in the home stretch, everybody. With winter breaks just on the horizon, finals are almost past us. So for this week, I thought it would be fitting to give you all the events you need to help you guys survive finals. Or another way to put it, to keep staying alive. The Bee Gees are performing at the Beaconsfield Theater on Friday, November 24th. The infamous 70s disco band is in town for their North American Staying Alive tribute tour. Doors open at 6:30 and the show starts at 8. Tickets are on sale for just $49 Canadian on Ticketmaster. If that doesn't help you get over the end of semester blues, then stop on by to Concordia's drop-in Mindful Community Art Sessions. The Mindful Art Sessions are run by students in creative arts therapies and members of the Mindful Initiative at Concordia. They are designed to help you practice mindfulness in your daily life. The sessions are open to all members of the Concordian community. Art supplies are provided by the facilitators. The sessions are held every Wednesday from 3:30 to 5:30 at Concordia's ER building. For more information, check out Concordia's event page. If you're in need of a good laugh, then check out the Comedy Wildlife Photography Awards exhibition at the Montreal Science Center. See countless humorous images of animals taken from around the world. It's the first time that the exhibition has premiered in Canada and features three winning images taken in Canada to mark the occasion. Tickets are on sale for $27 Canadian. For more information, check out mtl.org. And that's your community calendar for this week. I'm Lucas Matthew Marsh.
Well, that was deceiving. We had this whole thing set up. We were going to play music to start the show off nice. We tried to use this aux line, but it seems like classic Concordia Wi-Fi. There's no connection, and now we're scrambling. Absolute but that classic. Seems like a usual thing with us, eh, guys?
Mm-hmm. I don't even know how to start now without the music.
I don't even know how to start either. It just feels like it's very unorthodox for us to start a show with no music. It's very uncommon. But you know what? Let's just start it with our beautiful voices. On that note, you're listening to The Starting Rotation on CJLO 1690 AM. As always, Gabriel Gindy, Jacob Snyder, and Matthew Skelhorn. How the heck are you guys?
We're doing good, man. We're wrapping up the semester. There's like 3-4 weeks left, right?
3-4. Talk about one. Next week is my last week. I can't wait. I'm counting the days.
Are you scrambling?
Kind of. I have a friend coming down from back home pretty soon. He's actually coming before the end of next week. So I am. This weekend is going to be the full-on press.
How about you?
I'm actually not struggling that much due to the fact that I have two classes left with a TA shift every Monday. I'm just more beyond excited to complete my bachelor's. It's like my last few weeks here on campus.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat as you. Final semester, just getting the final experience. I feel like Kobe's final ride, except I'm nowhere near Kobe. But you know, just going to different things here and there, different events I'm surely going to miss once the whole university experience is over.
Yeah, we're definitely going to miss these things the moment we're gone, but we're also excited that it comes to an end. It's a very like bittersweet type of feeling that like right now I'm super excited, but maybe a month from now I'll want to come back for some reason. It's always like that.
It's so funny listening to you guys. I was right there too, and now I'm in a graduate program. So I'm sure I'll see you both back here in about a year or so. when you first finish, it's very exciting, and then you realize how much you miss the community. You miss meeting people. You miss all the opportunities that school presents to you. And that's what really got me back. I did an MBA at first, a master's in business, and then found myself in the graduate diploma. So I know you both are excited to be done now, but
here's what I want to know. Like, as someone who's already been in university and undergrad program for like 4 years,
yes,
I'm like sick of it.
Oh, yeah.
How do you feel?
Gabe, the second you take a break, it is extremely refreshing. I'll never understand when people say, oh, you can't take time off school. I've done that plenty of times in my life, and it's done nothing but refresh me. I was very eager to get back to school after my undergrad. I took about a year off, and that first semester felt great. I was relaxed. I was like, I don't have all these school deadlines bearing down on me. But after a while, I kind of missed it. I kind of missed that routine of going and learning and seeing people I knew. And especially going into a different program from when I did my undergrad in, it's been so refreshing. I definitely don't feel burnt out like you'd expect based on the number of years of schooling I did. That said, am I going to do more? I don't think so. But I don't know. Today I was looking at MBA programs. Took a quick look at Caribbean Medical School, but I don't think
we're
doing that.
Caribbean Medical School.
You never know.
You have to get into that. What do you mean, Caribbean Medical School? What does even that entail? Like,
so they're a little light on the prerequisites to get in, and I actually have them for my time doing pre-med.
Oh, wow.
For my short time doing pre-med, yeah. So I actually, even though I didn't finish it, I actually have the minimum prereqs. Now, would I be a good candidate? No. Am I going to do it? No. But it was just funny to look and, oh, I qualify.
This is fitting. Because I know we didn't have a song to start off the show, but I'm adding a song right now. And do you know the title of the song, Matt?
No idea.
There's a little hint right there. It's Fire by Jimi Hendrix. And there is a big fire going on in Calgary.
Oh, good, solid transition.
With the Calgary Flames. There is a fire in house. Huberto isn't producing. Kadri is a shell of what he was with Colorado. What's going on over there?
I think it has to do with ever since Goudreau demanded for a trade 2 years ago, that's like kind of the beginning of the end for them after such a great year that they had. The offseason, although they were versus the Oilers, which is another thing we'll talk about a bit later. But ever since Goudreau and then a few weeks/months later, Tkachuk leaving, and them thinking that bringing on Huberto and Kadri would kind of solve their problems. Unfortunately, the fire hasn't burned out there yet. It's still going, and not in the good way.
The fall from grace that the Calgary Flames have experienced within the past 3 years has probably shook the people who were on that team 3 years ago. When you had one of the best first lines in hockey with Goudreau, Lindholm, and Tkachuk, those guys, I think, were damn near 100 points each.
Yeah.
And then to fall from that to where they're at now, where you have a competent player in Jonathan Huberto, who just got signed a max deal, $10.5 million over 8 years, which is a lot of money, especially in the NHL. It ain't football money, Jacob. But
no. I heard that number in max. Are you kidding?
Yeah. Well, you know, salary caps in the NHL are very, very minute compared to CFL and NBA.
$82 million, $81 million, $82 million.
NFL too.
That's not even half the NFL's. That's incredible. I was not aware of that.
Yeah, so when you're paying a player that amount of money, right, it's all relative, but when you're paying a player that amount of money and who isn't performing, sorry, my mic just swiveled out my mouth there. But when you have a player who is just isn't performing at that level, it's not only, and especially in the Canadian market, it's not only stressful for the player itself, but the organization, the management team who signed that player. And, you know, we already saw the coach in Edmonton get fired. I'm blanking on his name right now.
Woodcroft,
exactly. Yeah. But we might see that with this coach in Calgary.
Well, Sutter was fired as well from Calgary, and now the management right now are still kind of struggling. But it's like you said, I just feel like the team in general, ever since they lost these two core players that, nonetheless, they've been with Calgary for years, and they've had maybe a few struggling seasons down the line. And then they kind of built something with it. And then just out of nowhere, both top players peak in their prime leaving. Replacing that with two players from completely different teams. And, you know, you had Huberto who had, like, insane chemistry with Barkov. And Goudreau, who had insane chemistry with Tkachuk. It's just very unfortunate for the Flames to not only make this deal, because it wasn't even their fault. You see, it was the player's decision to leave. And the fact that they have to deal with that sucks. And just put yourself in the fans' shoes.
Yeah.
In their perspective. That must just be very frustrating, especially seeing like the Canucks now doing really good.
Yeah, well,
when
the,
it was like the opposite.
The Canucks, they have so much young talent on that team. It was expected of them to really pick it up this year. What I don't like though about the Flames coaching system and how they're treating Huberto, if you compare it to the way Huberto played and excelled in Florida, they were a more offensively rushed team. They were their transition was very, very quick from coast to coast. If you look at the way they're applying him now in Calgary, he's almost static in the neutral zone. And without that fluidity in his game that's now removed, it seems like he's more urged or more pressured to make decisions that he would not have made if he was in motion, if that makes any sense.
I feel like that makes sense, but would you think that maybe it has to do with the players around him too a bit? Because I felt like what Huberto had in Florida was just insane chemistry, like I said before. Right now, I just feel like it's a bunch of very talented players just... They're not meshing at all.
And because I think the Nazem Kadri one-year runoff there he had in Avalanche with the Colorado Avalanche was, again, very temporary. I don't think it was something that... Because you saw him in Toronto, saw him with the Avalanche excelling, and then he got his bag, well-deserved, by the way.
Very well-deserved.
To Calgary, where he's kind of like back to who he was. He kind of got his feet planted back on the ground again.
Yeah, he's consistent, but he, like... Outside of that year in Colorado, he's not a $7 or $7.5 million per year player.
No.
He's nowhere near that. He's more like a $3-4 million, maybe bottom six to like top six, maybe second or third line center, with one crazy year and a Stanley Cup championship, which is why he kind of deserves what he got. But it's just unfortunate that it's just very different now ever since he changed team.
Yeah, and if we stay on the western side of Canada, you know, we have the Oilers too, who have a lot of quarrels right now, not only with the new coach coming in, goaltending now with Jack Campbell relieved to the AHL. There's a lot of empty questions in general. Like where do they go from here? What do they do really? You have Draisaitl and McDavid who are kind of picking it up slowly. I wouldn't say they're there fully yet. You have a defensive, pretty much like squad in general who are not really, or frankly, like if you look at Nurse, for example, overpaid, underperforming, he's kind of a cone.
Yeah. I mean, we talk about him like the past two episodes that I've done here, Darnell Nurse has been a big topic of discussion. It's unfortunate.
It's because when you allocate that much money to three of your players. So McDavid's getting a bag. He's getting like, what, 13?
Yeah, 13. Draisaitl is at just slightly below that. And then Nurse at nine.
So when you already have like 20% of your
way
cap.
Way more than that. I think it's like 25 to 30.
Something like that. Just to three players. And mind you, one of the players is that. It was the summer when Seth Jones got paid the bag in Chicago, and it just brought up the market for every average D-man to get his flowers, which is like whatever, I guess. But if you think about it now, like looking back, those were impulse signings. Those were signings that should have never been done. And again, shout out to the player for getting your money. Do that.
Yeah.
You worked for it. Get it. But at the same time, now whoever signed that player, whether it be management in general, whatever, like general managing, you know, they kind of screwed the pooch on that one.
Yeah, it gives them a lot more troubles to deal with, like we're seeing right now, where even the Campbell signing of like over $5 million per year over 5 years, with like a decent season in Toronto the year prior, and now look at him like a few years later, he's down in the AHL, even almost not even playing games in the AHL.
So I heard a little birdie tweet, not literally, but tweet in my ear, that the Oilers were interested in Sam Maltembeau. What do you think of that? Is that even, I don't think that would really change anything, to be completely honest.
No, because they need a starting goalie. They don't need a supporting goalie. So
exactly. So
if you're just getting two supporting goalies, I think it's just going to be much of the same thing. Although, like, you know, I have a personal bias on Maltembeau and knowing that he's playing surprisingly very well these past few seasons, despite problems with our team and the Habs. But they need a starting goalie, like point à ligne. I don't know how else to say it. And finding these supporting goalies just won't really help them excel their game, because not only is it the problems with goalies, but it's problems with their defense as well, which is another big topic of discussion. And on top of that, their forwards are not performing nowhere certainly as well as they were last year, with like equally both over 140 points to I think they are averaging a point per game, which is just very, very unfortunate for the Oilers. And
well, if they need a goalie, that's funny you say that. I might know a team. I might know one.
What, your local Garage League team?
Yes, sir. The local Garage League team. No, actually, the local team, the Montreal Canadiens. Any chance they go after Allen? He's available.
But that's the same
thing. It's the same player as Motembo, because Motembo. Because Jake, I don't know if you're aware of the Habs tandem. I know you don't really follow hockey that much.
Oh, but I've had to hear about the goalkeeping situation different times. Okay. Tandem, try trio, but anyway.
Actually, the Oilers were looking at Kane Primo as well. Which I think, if you're choosing between the three, and all three of them aren't really the best pick, I guess you'd try and if I'm the GM of the Oilers, I guess I'd go for the youngest player of the bunch who has the highest ceiling. But like Montembeau, Allen, or Primo aren't really the it factor that this Oilers team needs to get to that next level, especially when they were so highly touted in the offseason. They thought the betters in Las Vegas all the way to. Name a spot where they bet. Las Vegas to Timbuktu, you know, they're pretty much saying that, yeah, the Oilers will be in the finals this coming year. And yeah. Look at them now. They're 7 or 8 points away from a playoff spot. That's a wild card spot. So they're like in 10th or 11th. Like, yeah, they're not great, man.
They're
really
like
not
five
great.
Or six wins over like 13 games. It's unseen for compared to like the last few years that we've seen them compete. But like, if we stay in the West and then we look at like the Canucks, for example, or even the Winnipeg Jets, these are in both teams the point leaders right now, which was not like that last year. You have, I think, Kyle Connors, he's dominating in goals right now with 14 goals. And then you have Quinn Hughes and Brock Besser. And there's one more forward that I'm blanking on his name, but they're dominating in the point leaders. So it's crazy to see that shift in between what's happening in the West.
Yes, it is. So we did a bit of hockey talk. You know, we're gonna take a quick little break. We'll be back after these short messages with some nice CFL Alouettes coverage, man. Let's go. Yes. Let's get into it. We'll be back soon.
You're horrid, you're ghastly, and I love you true. So here are some presents I'm sending to you.
If you consider yourself a goblin, ghost, or a ghoul, then you should listen to Deadbeats on Fridays from 3 to 4 with your ghost at the most, me, Pretty Dead Boy. I play most things emo and alternative, and I promise it's just to die for.
You're the coolest little monster that ever put the spook on me.
Traveling seems almost like a necessity, either for the pleasure of discovering new places or to visit friends and family. However, in a time of increased awareness about our environmental impact, ViaRail might provide the answer you need. Not only does ViaRail offer a solution to the problem of travel's carbon footprint, but does so at low cost and with great comfort. But don't just take it from me. Here are two members of the Concordia community who can speak to their own experiences traveling with Via.
I love taking ViaRail because I like the quiet pause and relaxation it incorporates into my travel. I always meet really cool people on the train and enjoy taking the time to have interesting conversations with my fellow travelers about where they come from and where they're going.
I've used ViaRail quite a few times and I really like it. It's accessible price-wise, even for students, and it's super, super convenient. I'll definitely keep using them.
Go to viarail.ca to learn more about pricing options for students and young people so you can start making a difference and saving money with your travel today.
At least a field goal to force overtime in this Grey Cup game. Second and 18. Don't need it all at once. Fajardo.
Got something.
He's going to take off. Cody Fajardo, he is taken down. Here we go. This could be it. Third and 5. A deep look. Down the left. It's caught by Cole Speaker. Big first down inside the 20. The drive continues. Jeshrin Antwi is still in it, running back for the Alouettes. They're inside the Winnipeg 20. Down by three. Time running out. End zone! Touchdown! Tyson Philpott!
That was the final drive in this weekend's Grey Cup. The 110th, right? First time the Alouettes won in 13 years. Last time, I was like 10 years old. I just remember Calvillo hoisting that bad boy. I only started watching within the final drive, so I managed to witness that comeback, but it was great. It was a really great game, a good comeback. And yeah, after looking at the highlights earlier, it was really a lot of back and forth, eh, Matt?
Yeah, it was awesome to be a Montreal sports fan again. It kind of reminded me like how the CF Montreal almost got to the finals last year, and how like I didn't really tune in during the season, but when you see a team from your city getting that far, it's always exhilarating, and it always means close to the heart. And I even had, as you saw the other day, I had a 2010 Champions Alouette hat that my grandfather gave me that I swore I would have never worn and just keep it for people to look at. But after such a win, especially in comeback fashion, I had no I had no restriction. I brought it out, took off the tag, and wore it all day.
So you would think people would be talking about the game the following day, right? That's usually what happens when a team, you know, grinds through a whole season, gets to the postseason, beats a 16-2 Argonauts team, goes after that, gets to Hamilton, wins against a dynasty in the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. But then this is what really made people start talking the following day.
Tu venais ici, puis j'avais un jeu en anglais. Ils n'ont jamais cru en nous. Mais tu sais quoi, man? Gardez-le, votre anglais. Parce qu'on va rentrer ces couples.
So, you know what? As an Anglo-Montrealer born in Quebec, I was hyped. That speech hyped me up because I'm bilingual. I speak French too.
Mm.
Moi, je parle en français, man. Like, it's all good.
100%.
What I didn't like, though, is the way these politicians spun it the following day. That's kind of what bothered me personally. It kind of diverted away from their win, especially like the way they got there. Because if you look at the Alouettes' record, they did not. They only beat teams that had losing records the whole season.
Mm-hmm.
And come postseason time, no one believed in them. And they finally got all the way there, made it. And then to have all that kind of shadowed while this takes the forefront, you know, it's kind of a bit whack.
Yeah,
especially used to like to push some ideologies here and there. You know, it's kind of like.
But I can even argue that it happened even before the game too, because we knew that there was no like French signs in Hamilton, and in one of the TV guides it was saying that it was Toronto versus Winnipeg in the finals before even knowing who is actually being in the finals, which kind of caused this mega reaction, especially for Quebecers on the Alouettes team, and there was no doubt that especially if they were going to win this game like they did, that something like that would have happened, especially in the spur of emotion. That's why, like you said, I'm more Anglophone, but when I saw that speech live, I was super hyped and like I respected that he took the throne and he said that, but the fact that now politicians took it into more almost of a campaign.
Yeah, it was a way to appeal to, you know, become a demagogue in a way, appeal to the, you know, that sovereignist French side. But hey, Jake, as someone, you know, who is not a Montrealer nor a Quebecer, did you hear this interview before we played it?
I did. But the funny thing is, I only heard that end clip about keep your English. And it's so frustrating as a sports fan when these athletes finally show us the emotion and passion. Yes. They're so buttoned up in post-game interviews. Jalen Hurts from the Eagles being the most famous example. They're so monotone and boring, and it's awful to watch. And then finally these athletes cut loose. He's showing us this raw emotion, and all that happens with it is it's taken out of context and used in a way that obviously the athlete did not intend for. It's so frustrating as a sports fan, because if we didn't do that, and the way social media is, there's really no way to stop it. But if we didn't do that, these guys would be so much more willing to open up in the post game to actually let you in on their thoughts and feelings and where they're coming from. But we're just never going to get that.
You nailed it on the head. And the emotion, just that part, if you look at both broadcasts between RDS, which had the French side, right, and then TSN, the English side, the CRTC had a field day. They collected a big check. The amount of F-words and S-bombs I heard throughout the broadcast at the end when they really won it, I was laughing. I was laughing my butt off the whole way through. It was funny. But, yeah, that emotion is needed. And now for a player who on the plane ride home was hearing that all these politicians were using this, has to come off the plane once they land and be like, you know, I meant it a certain way. I didn't mean it to demean any English people. I just wanted to say that, like, we weren't respected, which is totally fine. Mm-hmm. I have no problem with that. But just to spin it in a way that, like, can help them in their political, like, sides, you know, I don't really like that, man.
Just let them live their emotions. Like you said, you want to see that in sports, and we don't get the chance to see that as much. So, and then when it happens, it kind of turns into something completely different. It's frustrating.
So this would be the time when one of us would have been at the celebration. You know, as a Montrealer living here, well, actually not living here, but 25 years old, okay, I didn't really see much in terms of celebration. I was too young for the last Alouettes celebration. Never saw the Habs go anywhere, win a cup.
We had that cup run a few years ago. That was fun. But
still not. It was fun until I got, like, tear gassed. Yeah. Yeah, we got tear gassed. It was heavy. Yeah, like the night that we went to the finals when Lekkonen scored that fateful goal there.
Oh, really? Versus the Knights?
Yeah, I was downtown, and we went straight near the Bell Center, and it was mayhem, pure pandemonium. So that's the only thing I can experience, like, as a city together in relation to sport. So this would have been fun, but the weather outside, and, you know.
Yeah, I had restrictions with work after. It's more the scheduling.
No excuses, but.
I know. It's true.
You know
it's
what? True. I'm going to throw the number out. If anyone wants to give us a call, we're not expecting much, but 514-848-7471. You can give us a call and tell us what your favorite moment, I guess, of the Grey Cup was. 514-848-7471.
Yeah, or if you're even there, it would be fun to just hear it.
And somehow you're carrying a radio around.
Yeah, it's true. Maybe you're at a shop on the corner street or something, you know? Maybe it's being played in the background at a diner. Is there still diners?
I hope so. The diners are great.
Yeah.
Do Montrealers care? That was my very first thought.
Okay, the amount of bandwagoners who are probably there right now are tenfold.
Right. That's,
you know, because no one really. No, I don't want to be. I don't want to be that guy. But no one really cares about the CFL until something happens in their city. I think
I'll be that guy. Not a soul watches the CFL.
No, I disagree. In the Western Canada, you know, where they have nothing else.
Heavy.
In Regina, you know, that's less Western, more central. But, you know, those areas, they are fans.
Where they have nothing else, that was hilarious.
Yeah. But actually, yeah, where they have nothing else, unfortunately, where they just have, like, I guess, corn husking activities and such. I don't know. But the thing is, though, when, like, it's actually gone to the point, believe this, okay, there were more fans at the Winnipeg Blue Bombers game than the Winnipeg Jets recent, like, yeah, home
yeah.
game.
Yeah. Yeah,
and the Winnipeg Jets Arena only has like 16,000 capacity.
Hold on, though. See, I actually have a man on the street down in Winnipeg. I did the NBA with him in Windsor. He was telling me when that team first came, the Winnipeg Jets were the hottest ticket in town. You couldn't get your hands on them. But now, to your point, people hand the tickets away for free. And I don't quite understand the shift. Also, you had talked about the Alouettes quickly winning a championship 10 or so years ago. Were people more into it then?
I was too young. I don't really know, but I know that, like, my grandfather was a big fan, and he's from Montreal originally, but he lived in Hamilton for over 20, 30 years even. But I remember he would talk about the Alouettes just as much as you talk about the NFL. You know, he was deep into it. And I never really played football. Watching football is not my favorite sport to watch out of, like, other sports that I do watch. But I feel... I was younger, so I don't really know, but it felt bigger, for sure. But I don't know if that's because I was just young and naive and didn't really know what was going on.
Yeah, I think it's all a matter of perspective. But I just remember Calvillo being... Honestly, Calvillo, wild take. I think he's the best professional QB of all time.
Ooh. Wow.
If you think about it...
Jake,
Jake just rubbed his head.
My goodness.
Oh, my God. Wow. I regret saying that. I really should not... No, I shouldn't have
said
that.
So I'll have to plug my new solo podcast at the end of this show.
No, but I think he has the most accomplished... The most passing yards of any pro QB.
Why didn't he ever go to the NFL? I never understood. I'm even aware of Calvillo.
I never understood that either. I don't know. But actually, Calvillo is on the coaching staff, so he got an extra. He won yesterday as well. So every time within the past, what, 3-4 championship runs?
He was there.
He was there.
Yeah.
On the field or not, but he was there.
My favorite all-time CFL player, Warren Moon.
Warren Moon. That rings a bell.
Yes, sir.
He was in the NFL, was he?
He was, but he started in the CFL.
Oh, same thing like Kurt Warner too, right?
Kurt Warner, yeah, that was a wild journey.
Continue. Please.
But the CFL, one area I really feel like they could improve on to up the interest, again, I'm coming from the perspective that people don't care as much about CFL, but again, I'm far away. I'm 8.5 hours away from here, and I'm 4 hours away from Toronto. I don't have a team near me. But one area I really feel like the CFL should embrace more is being a pipeline to the NFL. Get closer to the NFL,
yeah.
Where you have more of their players scouted. The NFL does not put a priority on scouting CFL. That's so obvious.
Believe it or not, there was one point where the CFL actually had American teams.
I read that too. I saw that.
Baltimore, they had, which before the Ravens. They were there before the Ravens.
No way.
I swear to God.
It was like in the 80s.
Yeah. And they had I think they had one or two more teams in the U.S. They were slightly expanding, and then they just got totally shut out. But
for obvious reasons.
For it, exactly. But for it to be a pathway for NFL players to either come up or come down, that would be great. But with NCAA, I guess that's all you really need, right? To use as like a, I don't know.
Exactly. Like, but again, it's all about exposure for these guys.
Because the level's good. The level's good. Like even, even Chad Johnson, when he came down and played for Montreal for 2 weeks or whatever, not literally 2 weeks, but for like a few months.
Wasn't there Manziel too?
Manziel, yeah, but that's a whole other story. Ocho Cinco came down and he initially thought it was going to be like easy. He was like, yeah, this is whatever. But he realized quick that like, no, these are guys who played D1 NCAA football, didn't have a chance either because of politics, didn't have a right agent or whatever, never really got that shot.
Injuries
too. And he said, yeah, it is a very good level of football. The rules are slightly different, but hey, it's still a good level of football nonetheless. So yeah, anything else you guys want
to add? I really feel like it could be more a part, because you have such a big sports fan base here. I feel like it could become a part of a main team that people follow, but it's just, it doesn't feel that way to me right now.
Yeah, and exactly. A lot of people are going to use today as an excuse to get drunk and become bandwagon fans. That's what I think.
I do too. That's the thing. And that's so frustrating to see a team, like you said, they went all the way. They climbed the mountain. They won the title. And you're getting primarily bandwagon fans at the celebration.
Yeah. And I want to ask you, though, as a diehard NFL fan, what could the CFL do differently to get you on board?
Okay. I've had this opinion for a long time, but I'm starting to almost retract it a bit because I appreciate they're doing something different. But the main reason I don't watch the CFL is the three down thing. I think football is meant to be played with four downs. At the same time, I respect them being different. That's my reason for not watching. I don't know how common that is among other fans.
The downs, eh? Yeah, because what I like about, again, I think if I collectively time the amount of minutes I watch in a CFL season, probably like 10 minutes, which is like not the best thing. So, but what I used to watch a lot more when I was younger. And what I did like was the fast paced of it.
Because, I think that's what I like about it too.
Yeah. Cause you have three downs. You have to be more adventurous in your playmaking, in your play selection as well. It's more pass oriented because like, why would you waste a play on a run that can only get you like 2-3 yards? I'll just gun it for like, if you look at the final drive in the Alouettes comeback, that's exactly what they did. They Fajardo saw no open pass, scrambled, got near the first down, made a nice pass afterward, and then a pass to I'm blanking, Cody Philpott in the end zone. So that'd be my counter. But I just think the fanfare in the States is you can't beat that.
But Jacob, is that what's frustrating with like the fact that they have three downs? Is it like the amount of chances that they're missing, and if they were to get four downs?
See, yeah, my main issue with three downs, it really limits the offensive coordinator. There's some amazing play callers in the NFL. Another reason why I really like football. They can get super inventive because they have three downs to play with. That fourth down, that's your punt, that's your field goal. Whereas in the CFL, like you said, having two, you're under so much pressure to get something done. These guys are like, okay, I have to attack here. I have to pass. I can't just try something on first down. I can't get super inventive because I don't have downs to waste. And I think that robs the game of a certain interest factor.
That would make sense. But speaking of the NFL, I know we're supposed to talk about the Browns and their winning formula.
Before that, we actually might get someone from the parade right now. I'm
breaking. Let's go.
Very interesting.
No, while y'all are continuing to talk about that down, those downs, I'm trying to get someone down to come on the show.
Very good.
So they might be calling in like soon. Hold on. Please continue. Talk about the NFL. I'm just going to be like working from the back end.
Hey, we appreciate any and all callers. But no, to the Browns' point, the NFL right now is such a passing league. The Browns are out of QBs. They've either released them from the roster, Deshaun Watson got hurt. The backup situation is extremely murky. They have a late-round rookie starting for them, and yet they're 7-3. They have one of the best defenses I've seen within the last 5 years. They have a solid kicker. They have a good punter. But this non-traditional style, how long can it last? Can they keep winning games at a high level? I really don't think so. When they need a drive, in the NFL, especially playoffs, teams get a lot of time to watch tape, watch film on a certain opponent. They do week to week as well, don't get me wrong, but in the playoffs, it's amplified. They have a whole season's worth of games to go off of. Sorry, they have a whole season's worth of game to go off of, and they can really take away the very few things the Browns do well, like running offensively. I think that'll cause them such trouble in the playoffs that they won't be able to capitalize on their good regular season.
So we're going to divert right back to CFL. Blake, do you hear us?
Sorry, what was that game?
Oh, there we go. How are you, Blake?
I'm good, and you?
Good, good. So are you at the parade right now?
No, I am not.
Okay, so you know what? We actually threw a question out earlier. You watched the game, right?
Yeah, I did.
So what was your favorite memory of the game?
My favorite memory of the game was, it had to be on that final drive.
Yeah.
When Cody Fajardo, instead of throwing like a five-yard slant or an out route, he decided to throw it deep to Austin Mack. I don't know. Watching him do that, taking that big of a risk, honestly, just made me a fan. Made me a fan of Cody. Made me a fan of Austin for catching that ball. And that was probably the biggest play of the game because it was hit or miss from there. If he didn't make that throw, then the game was done. So that would have to be my favorite play of the game.
Yeah, no, that was a good play. Even the scramble right before that was also very sick. Like that out of pocket scramble to near the line of scrimmage. But like, are you gonna go to the parade later or? Not at all.
I might be. I just got back to the West Island, but I am maybe planning on going back into the city to meet with somebody for an interview. So if I have time, then I would love to go. Then I would love to go to the parade for sure. Do you know what time it ends at?
Like 2:30 ish.
So yeah, probably not then. But, probably not then. But it looks like a good time. It looks like a good time, and hopefully there's going to be another one next year that I could go to if we continue to. Play at a high level. We'll see if it was a one-hit wonder, but it's looking up for the Alouettes.
So like, I want to ask you, are you like, have you always been like an Alouettes fan or like nah?
Well, I'm more of an NFL fan. I've been an Alouettes fan. I remember when I was in elementary school, Jim Pop, who was the general manager for the Alouettes when they won the last Grey Cup in 13 years ago. Yeah, about 13 years ago. His son was in my class actually, Hudson Pop. And I know now they live in North Carolina, but at the time, before they moved back to the U.S., he was in my class, and the Alouettes won, and he brought the Grey Cup to my classroom, and we all took a picture with it. We all got to touch it, kiss the Grey Cup. It was dope. So from that moment on, I always rooted for the Alouettes, but we were always mediocre at best, pretty much. So I watched them this year. I went to a game against the Rough Riders. And I went to the last game I went to before that was, I think, Johnny Manziel's first game as starter in Montreal, which didn't really end up going well. But yeah, I would say I'm a bit more than a casual fan, but I'm not the most diehard Alouettes fan. He'll talk to you for
sure. So I threw this question to Jacob. Last question for you, Blake. And again, thanks for hopping on. But
for sure.
What do you think the CFL could do, or what would you change in the CFL that would make you a more like habitual fan rather than a casual fan?
Maybe trying to go after those big names. You know, like there's a bunch of NFL players that retire a bit early because like there's so much competition with up and coming players, and there's not enough roster spots for those old guys to stay on. I remember when Chad Ochocinco played in the CFL, that created a lot of buzz. So maybe going after those older veterans who have that big brand, that big name, and bringing them to the CFL could honestly boost their ratings. I know I would watch a lot more CFL if some of my favorite NFL legends decided to suit up in Canada. So I think that would help.
Very true. Hey, thanks, Blake, again. Thank you, man.
Thanks for having me.
See you. Bye. That's true, though. Some big names would be a pretty good idea.
Great idea for marketing. I think, and like you said, there's quite a few NFL players, and the NFL, bit faster, bit more physical. For a player that has a lot left in the tank but just can't hold up physically in the NFL, the CFL would present a unique opportunity for them to keep playing pro ball. Yeah. And for a lot of these guys, they can't stop. I mean, Ochocinco was the perfect example. He might have been more bored as well, but
that guy, he's like an anomaly. Not only like he penny pinches, which is like chill, but also like apparently he only eats McDonald's. Is that even true? He like eats no vegetables.
Never has veggies. Apparently, McDonald's for every meal.
When he was with the Bengals, his pregame meals were just like he has the same McDonald's combo he's been eating since like he was in like high school.
What is it?
I can't tell you.
Hamburgers and fries than the average person could consume.
Exactly,
yeah.
And a lot more MSG as well.
He runs like a 4.35 40 somehow.
Crazy, yeah, and he's still in great shape. Well, wow. You know what? No, we got a few more time before break, but yeah, we could take it a bit early. How do you guys feel?
I can keep going with the NFL, or if you
please,
want to
take
a
break. Please, yeah, get back. No, we kind of did like CFL, bit of NFL, back to CFL.
Well, hey, we're jumping around so much.
I had to go over to you to answer the phone, and then it kind of like messed up your train of thought, and I had to come back. And we had Blake, who was a great voice, by the way. Great.
Very good.
Blake Saraga, shout out. But yeah.
Yeah, appreciate the caller. Since we're jumping around so much, why don't we do something fun instead of like me diving deep into some of these teams? I had written this down on the show sheet, and I'm so excited to do this. I called it Gabe the Bachelor.
It's a new segment. A
brand new segment on the show. We might do it weekly. Who knows? I'd love, before the end of the year, to find him a team to love. That's the thing. We're going to match Gabe with an NFL team. I've brought along with me three suggestions. I'm going to run them by you.
Okay.
I'm going to give my reasons each. I'm going to present each to you, and you're going to tell me how appealing they sound.
I'm ready.
Okay. My first suggestion is the Miami Dolphins. A perpetually underperforming team that is having one of their best years in a while. Absolutely electric offense. But each time they've gone against a good opponent, teams that have been considered playoff teams, they haven't won. That's option number one. Just stick with me.
Locked and loaded.
Number two, we have the Houston Texans. One of the most non-traditional draft moves ever. They had the second overall pick. They then traded a ton of their future picks in the current draft, to move up to the third pick. They took two young players, C.J. Stroud and a defensive end, Will Anderson, from Alabama. Both are stars. Stroud is having the greatest rookie season ever. They're 6-4, 6-5. They weren't expected to be very good, but now they're on the upswing. A young team, a coach who used to play for them, who's just very energetic, who the players love. That is option number two. Finally, a team that I will never root for in my lifetime, but a very interesting story. The Minnesota Vikings begun the season 0-3, might have even been 0-4. Starting quarterback Kirk Cousins was playing amazing, and he kept that role going. He got the team back to 4-4, but then he was hurt. Enter Jaren Hall, who then lasted one series. Now enter Josh Jobs, who was brought in the week before, no practice time, and is also a NASA astronaut.
Eh.
He is now their starting quarterback.
Sending balls to space?
Exactly. And himself, apparently. He is now their starting quarterback, and they've largely continued their winning ways. I know they recently dropped one to Denver, but just from that story alone, I included them in the list. What sounds the most appealing? Option A, the Miami Dolphins, and feel free to jump on this as well, the Houston Texans or the Minnesota Vikings?
I could add something on the Minnesota Vikings. I don't know if you guys are How Much Your Mother fans, but it is Marshall's team. So.
Oh, excellent. Yes. So
that's an added benefit to you choosing the Minnesota Vikings.
If we're talking about entertainment intertwining with sports, I was going to say Miami because of Ace Ventura. The first Ace Ventura film with Dan Marino, little cameos here and there. Dan Marino was a dog.
True.
Okay, you know what? Okay, if we're gonna do this every week, let's do like a playoff bracket type of thing. And yeah, I think my first pick this week would be Miami.
I'm actually adjusting the dock right now. This welcome to our new segment. That's excellent. And what about you? Of the three I sold,
I'm definitely going Vikings.
Okay.
Because of what I said about How I Met Your Mother. And then we'll go from there.
On that note, I think it's a perfect time to take a little break. We'll be back after these messages.
Envie de films audacieux qui renouvellent le langage du cinéma?
Pour un accès privilégié aux visions les plus stimulantes et diversifiées du cinéma documentaire, les RIDM sont le festival à ne pas manquer.
Ça se passe du 15 au 26 novembre à Montréal.
Rendez-vous au ridm.ca pour tout savoir sur la programmation.
Les Rencontres internationales du documentaire de Montréal. Là où toutes les histoires se rencontrent.
Hi, and welcome to the show tonight. Tonight we have...
the best new music.
But right now, let's check out the changes in this week's...
CJLO.
Top 30.
Charts and crafts. Counting down the best new artists played at the station. Every Friday at noon, only on CJLO 6090 AM.
And we're back. I'm your host for this last segment, Jacob Snyder, with Gabe Gindy, and I'm completely blanking on your name. That's why Matthew. I didn't use it. Matthew, yep. I've been hiding that all show. Completely forgot the guy's name.
Practice makes perfect, Jake.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So for our last segment, you guys ready to jump into the NBA?
Oh, I'm ready.
Okay.
Let's do it.
So as I was coming up with topics, I was looking into teams. Something really stood out to me, especially from last night. The scoring in the NBA is crazy. Pacers and Hawks last night, a 157-152 non-overtime game. There are 42 players currently averaging 20 points or more in the NBA. Gabe, do you like what you've been seeing?
I don't know, because like it seems like now the term All-Star is becoming more and more diluted and less and less like prestigious, you know what I mean? So like... The way the game is going, as we mentioned on prior shows, you know, it's a lot more spaced out, a lot more 3-point oriented, less reliance on true positions like a traditional center, for example, a traditional point guard, you know. So seeing kind of like the intertwining of position in relation to an uptick in scoring does make sense if you see the way the game is going now. But do I like it? I don't, it's cool, but it's kind of like copy-colle in a way where like if everything's getting copied off other things, kind of like you kind of lose that authenticity. Like we'll never see like a Shaq again, right? We'll never see like a Julius Irving or you know, I'm blanking now.
But Moses Malone.
Exactly, or Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, you know, and of course these are big men, but like these guys dominated games with their unique style of the center position. But now the center and multiple other positions are now all beyond the arc, which is a bit weird.
Now, Matt, I know you're not a big NBA guy, but just this is a sports in general question because leagues really have been pushing it towards offense. Do you enjoy watching your teams play where there's not a lot of defense and it's mostly focused on scoring?
Well, that's what I was about to ask. I mean, like a game, like just speaking of the NBA and 157 to 152, does that mean that there's like just no defensive play at all?
None.
No, it's non-existent now.
No, exactly. Guys aren't really trying to guard, and when they do, it doesn't look good. These offensive players are so skilled and the rules are so in their favor. Before, back in the day, you used to be able to hand check who you were guarding. Now you can't touch guys.
Yeah.
And does that remove the intensity of the game? Like, it's obviously fun to see players score nonstop, and a score like that, that's probably going back and forth like the entire 60 minutes.
Right. And does it remove the intensity? Yes. Gabe, I don't know if you remember back in the day, but this was 2010. Lakers-Celtics NBA Finals. Absolutely loved how that series was played. Extremely physical between both teams. When the Celtics would have their best defenders on Kobe, it was all hand-checking, physical, guys colliding at the rim. Is that style of play of basketball something that appealed to you? Or
of course, when any game, whether it be hockey, football, football, of course, is physical, right? But the NBA, when you lose that physicality, it kind of like takes away from a part of or an aspect of the game. Of course, I think many teams are emulating the Golden State Warriors and how successful they've been over the past like half decade, right? Like they've already won countless championships due to this new style of ball that we're seeing. But it kind of begs the question though, and I want to segue into the in-season tournament because I kind of wish it was done the way they do soccer in Europe, where you have multiple different leagues coming in for one trophy. So seeing this new style of play go up against, let's say, I don't know, European basketball,
especially in Spain.
Yeah, in Spain, like Barcelona,
yep.
Madrid. These teams, I want to see them go for it up against an NBA style team and see actually how big the difference was. Like, how big would this discrepancy be between both teams? And to see multiple teams from different leagues come up and try and go for, like, let's say, an in-season tournament trophy, that'd be so sick.
I think that would, too. And the talent over there is so strong. Exactly. We see it every year in the Olympics. They're always pushing the U.S. team.
Yeah, and mind you, over the summer, the U.S. lost.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Okay, and you can argue it wasn't their best players, but it was still a fine dandy.
It was still a group of all-stars, yeah. Mostly
Germany
all-stars.
Germany ended up winning, to give you an idea. And countless, you know, superstars that are European, right? Like Doncic, Sabonis. Well, Sabonis too is European, but you know, Doncic in particular really says that it's easier to score in the NBA than it is in Europe. So to see those teams maybe go up against each other, not only in preseason, I don't want to really see them play against Chinese teams, to be honest.
No, I don't need it.
Like, I get you're trying to expand your market for like monetary sake, but I really want to see them go up against legitimate teams from Europe in a potential in-season tournament. That'd be great.
Would that be a risk for the NBA?
I don't think so.
If anything, like they have to prove themselves. So it give the players more incentive to actually go out and win a game. Now you're seeing the way they're doing with these little colorful courts and stuff. Like, who gives up?
I know. You know what I mean? Who cares?
Like, who cares? It's like you're just, okay, you're at a different court and, like, I guess cooler jerseys. But, like, it literally means nothing because the players don't care either.
No, they're still sitting out games and resting.
Right now, it just seems all theoretical with no practice. Like, there's nothing practical to this at all. What would really make it interesting, in my opinion, is if you incorporate multiple different leagues all together under one roof to make an actual in-season tournament, that would be dope.
Back to the style of play thing. One thing a less physical game does allow, though, is these older players to play for a bit longer.
I know where you're going with this.
One in particular I wanted to ask you about. He's having an incredible season, given he's, I think, 38, and just the NBA all-time leader in minutes played, LeBron James. Tell me a little bit about LeBron's season and what's impressed you so much.
Well, what's impressed me is that he's in his, 22nd year? And he is still schooling kids who are in their third, fourth year in the NBA, who are in their prime. This guy is somehow still technically off the tail end of his prime, but it just shows you how versatile he is, because he knows the game of basketball like the back of his hand. Like, he knows these schemes, these offensive ways to get like different opportunities going. And for him to still do this at this age and how effective he has been, we're never going to see a player like this again. We never will be.
I agree too, because one guy who looked like he might be, he was just so tall and thin, I thought he'd be exceptionally durable, was Kevin Durant. But even he's succumbed to a lot of injuries. He's not able to hold the minutes load most years before he's out. For the Lakers, though, Anthony Davis always struggling with injuries. Their roster around LeBron and AD has been extremely inconsistent. Can LeBron keep this up, and can they make a run?
Can LeBron keep this? Well, That's the thing. I think load management, especially now with the implementing fines now, right? If you load manage players in certain scenarios. Yeah. Yep. So with that being said, you know, it's going to be a lot tougher for coaches to effectively bench, no, not bench, trying to like manage minutes more or less, especially for a player who has been so tenured, you know, for in the NBA for so long. So with Davis's constant injuries, you know, it's an 82 game season. The play-in games are included, right? With the season in tournament are included within the regular season, are they?
Yep.
Yeah. So okay, it still stays to 82. Bit of postseason. Yeah, I don't know. It's all, I guess only time will tell, really. But judging by, you know, if we're using history as precedence, right? Davis gets injured, LeBron has to carry slack, and then the Lakers have no other supporting pieces for them. Yeah, okay, they picked up like maybe what, Kelly Olynyk? Maybe?
Not even. Torian Prince, yeah. Gabe Vincent. See, no names you'd even know.
These are guys that if you add like on a legacy team in 2K, they're just all bald with a headband.
Exactly.
The same guy with like made up names. These guys are nobodies. Oh, okay, I'm being mean. They're not nobodies. They're just guys who cannot contribute to have
at a consistent level.
Exactly. Especially come postseason when things get more physical, which for the NBA now is kind of rare, but still, you know, it's just, that's what it is.
There's a borderline hot take I've been sitting on for so many
just
years.
Say it.
But they won. So I kind of retracted it, but it always comes back. I would love to see them move AD, but not for picks, for players. I would like to see them maximize Davis's value before he's hurt again and try to bring back different players around LeBron that could potentially pick up some slack. A few in mind, LaVine, plus you'd get more. It wouldn't just be one for one. Obviously, Davis is way more valuable than Zach LaVine, but imagine bringing in like a LaVine, an Alex Caruso, And getting off AD's money as well for future seasons, ball handlers that could take some of the pressure off of LeBron. I think that's what they're lacking. Because AD's not a ball handler. LeBron's having to bring it up almost every time.
Yeah, but now, I don't know, because it seems like the chemistry between LeBron and AD are kind of like symbiotic in the sense where LeBron can bring it up, but then AD's in the post and he's ready.
Right.
You know? And he can also space the floor out to a degree, right? But with LaVine, they're kind of both ball dominant.
But that's the thing. For LeBron, it'd be an opportunity to preserve himself. LaVine can shoot. So what, you know, when it'd be playoff time, yes, LeBron's back to bring up. But I'm just talking about the regular season, keeping LeBron fresh. Bringing in a guy like that, that, like you just said, can handle the ball, can handle the scoring load at times.
At times. And that's the question. Like, LaVine somewhat is inconsistent to a degree. But with, let's say you're 1-2 is LeBron. How old is LeBron now? 39, going on 40? How old is he?
Right, 38, 39, something like that.
And then LaVine as your 1-2, and then a whole bunch of
Caruso's.
Smurfs, minions, right. Whatever you want to call them. Like, just like to have a 1-2 like that, that could be effective, you have to have a damn good depth. And they don't have damn good depth.
But that's what I'm talking about.
Caruso, only Caruso and LaVine really can't.
Moving, okay, then maybe LaVine was the wrong name to bring up.
But I get what you mean, but you're trying
but
to...
But splitting AD into that depth, into that good depth, where you're not having to rely on these minimum salary players all the time, which is essentially what the Lakers are doing. All these guys are minimum salary, mid-level players. But splitting AD into better players, as we've seen the NBA shift... Before, even a season ago, all these teams were going for three superstars. That was the model. The Suns, they're still doing it. Beal, Booker, Durant, and then you surround them with minimum guys. We have not seen that work. That does not work. Do the Lakers take it a step further and go back to about 10 years ago where teams, especially like the Pistons, you saw the Sixers make a deep run, where you get one main superstar, but you get him so much good help, he's able to take the team to the mountaintop.
I think what would be the best for them if they're going to go down that move, or that route rather, would be just damage control in the sense where they can mitigate and build for the future. Because I don't think, like, maybe they could, like, move a few pieces here and there to get, like, a certain oomph to their team, because it is a bit lacking, but... Only time will tell, and hey, if they do it, it'd be for the future, that's for sure.
All right, any final thoughts, guys?
I think that's about it.
Whoever's out right now partying, please have a beer for me.
Yes, exactly. Enjoy the parade, Montreal. Stay safe out there. For this week, this is the starting rotation. I'm Jacob Snyder, Gabe Gindy, and Matthew. Have a great week, guys.
Skelhorn.
Skelhorn. Yes.